Blog Talk Radio.
Mind Shift Radio.
Good evening, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Mind Shift Talk Radio. I'm your host, Stacey Emery, joined by the phenomenal and wonderful Juanita Sister Big Bones Warren. It is Mind Shift Monday, and as always, we are excited to be here with each and every one of you. We say thank you for tuning in, for those of you that are listening to the live show. For those of you that will be listening to the replay, thank you for listening to the replay, and we encourage you to share this with all of your friends and family members, any person that's in need of a mind shift. For those of you that are new to Mind Shift Talk Radio, Mind Shift is a show for you. It's for every individual that's looking to grow personally, professionally, spiritually. If there's ever an area in your life, if there's any area in which you need to have a mind shift or a paradigm shift in order for you to reach new levels of success, we encourage you to join us and tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific. But again, this show is for you. We have tons of fun on this show. We discuss everything across the sun, everything you could possibly imagine is discussed here on Mind Shift. And so we ask that when you come to the show, you come with an open mind, an open heart, an open perspective. You may not necessarily agree with everything that we discuss on the show, but we guarantee that if you just hang in there with us for the remaining hour, you are sure to have a healthy and positive mind shift. So again, thank you for tuning in. For those of you that are listening online at mindshifttalkradio.com, feel free to join us in the chat room, which should be opening for you shortly. Also, if you have any questions or any comments for tonight's guest, we have a really fired up crew that's going to be here tonight, and we encourage you to call in area code 347-989-0206. So feel free to give us a call, ask any questions, or share your comments or your concerns. We're open to hearing it. But again, this show is for you, so it's not just about us sitting here talking. We want you to be involved in the conversation and to always be engaged. So with that being said, we are going to get the show moving. So I want to introduce you, as I said, to my co-host, my partner in success and crime. What's going on, Juanita Sister Big Bones Warren? Woo! She's got
long name. Mind Shifting Monday, baby.
I'm telling you, your name is like a tongue twister, Juanita. Sister Big Bones Warren, Consuela, Margarita, Conchita, all of that. You know
yeah, I don't know why you insist on using my government name. I'm trying to lay low and you're not helping me.
What's going on?
Can't call a player, can't kill none, won't none die. What it is, what it be, what it look like, homie.
I promise you're special.
Thank you.
I am so excited about the show tonight. I'm really fired up about the panel that we have. I'm telling you, it's always great to have just some wonderful men in our company.
Indeed. And some nice sounding ones at that one. Hey,
Oh, gosh. Oh, goodness. I'm going to pray for you. But before we get started with tonight's topic, you know, we always go ahead and do our recap and just let our customers know. Our customers, forgive me, guys, I'm thinking business. Let our listeners know what we discussed on the previous week. In case you missed the show, we encourage you to go back and check it out. So why don't you go ahead and give us a recap of last week's show?
Sure. It was about who's in your circle and your sphere of influence, like who's your fave five, and how that impacts you and affects you personally and professionally. What's the gist of it? It was a great conversation between myself and the wonderful host and founder of Mind Shift Talk Radio, Stacey. So definitely check out the replay.
Right. Now, I know that you have a Mind Shift Minute for us, and normally we would do our Mind Shift Minutes at the end of the show. However, we're switching it up this week, right?
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and get our Mind Shift Minute going earlier this week. So We have to do it the right way. We gotta cue the music and let you get into your zone.
Nice.
So let's
go
to get ready. Ready for the Mind Shift Minute.
Right eye, then soft head, earring. Just a few of the things I like about you.
This is your Mind Shift Minute with Sister Big Bone.
Can a brother walk you home? Can I walk?
An anonymous person wrote, "The company you keep. It's better to be alone than in the wrong company. Tell me who your best friends are, and I will tell you who you are. If you run with wolves, you will learn how to howl. But if you associate with eagles, you will learn how to soar to great heights. A mirror reflects a man's face, but what he is really like is shown by the kind of friends he chooses. The simple but true fact of life is that you become like those with whom you closely associate, for the good and the bad. The less you associate with some people, the more your life will improve. Anytime you tolerate mediocrity in others, it increases your mediocrity. An important attribute in successful people is their impatience with negative thinking and negative acting people. As you grow, your associates will change. Some of your friends will not want you to go on. They will want you to stay where they are. Friends that don't help you climb will want you to crawl. Your friends will stretch your vision or choke your dream. Those that don't increase you will eventually decrease you. Consider this. Never receive counsel from unproductive people. Never discuss your problems with someone incapable of contributing to the solution, because those who never succeed themselves are always first to tell you how. Not everyone has the right to speak into your life. You are certain to get the worst of the bargain when you exchange ideas with the wrong person. Don't follow anyone who's not going anywhere. With some people, you spend an evening. With others, you invest it. Be careful where you stop to inquire for directions along the road of life. Wise is the person who fortifies his life with the right friendships. And always, always remember, a candle loses nothing and none of its light by lighting another candle. I'm Sister Big Bones, and this has been your Mind Shift Minute.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing the Mind Shift Minute. Again, we encourage you guys to go ahead and check out the replay from last week. It was a great show. It was definitely one that you want to share with friends and family members, anyone that's in your circle, again, that's in need of a mind shift. And it was a very short show, but very informative. And so we encourage you to go ahead and check that out. So thank you, sis.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So I don't want to take up too much time talking about last week's show, because we have a great show lined up for tonight. And like I said, we have an awesome panel of men that are willing to be here with us. You know, we're so honored to have them here, because some of them have been on the show before. Some of them are new to the show, so we're not going to tell you who is who, but we're going to give them an opportunity to introduce themselves to you tonight. And for those of you that probably didn't read the whole description of the show, we're basically talking about the black man. Is he misunderstood? And so there's many ways that you can take that topic, but basically what we want to do tonight is have a roundtable discussion with men, black men, that can share their perspectives as well as their experiences on some of the things that they deal with every day as being a black man in America. And so we know that there are several stereotypes that are out there. I can say I was a little disturbed with some cartoons I even saw, you know, when we were talking about having this conversation, and I was doing some research on some statistics and so forth, and just some of the things that are out there. It's just, it's ridiculous, to say the least. And excuse me, we're all familiar with some of the quote-unquote funnier stereotypes in terms of black people in general, you know, eating chicken and watermelon and liking red Kool-Aid and all that kind of stuff. And we joke about this stuff quite a bit, but I think we sometimes miss how serious this really is in terms of how we're viewed by people of other races and cultures. Excuse me, guys. And so we wanted to go ahead and be able to discuss this, talk about the stereotyping and the misconceptions that exist, but also talk about how we can change those stereotypes. And so we're going to do that with our roundtable. Again, if you have any comments, if you have any questions, we encourage you to call in at area code 347-989-0206. But we definitely want you involved in this conversation, the black male, is he misunderstood? So I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to our panel. Well, they'll go ahead and introduce themselves. And we're going to start off with man number one. Man number one, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
All right. I am man number one. I would describe myself as a Christian father and husband. I'm originally from Houston, Texas. I live currently in Atlanta, Georgia. I work as a sports official. And mainly I start each day trying to make the world a better place and trying to become a better person. And my perspective definitely comes from that of a believer in Christ. And so that's how I approach the world, and that's how I plan on approaching this topic.
Thank you, man number one. All right, man number two, go ahead and tell our listeners about yourself.
Okay, I'm married to my college sweetheart. Been married and together for 13 years. Have two wonderful boys. I live in North Carolina. Born in England, raised in Africa, lived upstate New York, now I live in the South, the beautiful South. I'm an orthopedic device specialist. That's what I do.
All
right. And my goal every day is just to raise my boys the right way. That's all I care about, is raising my kids the right way.
That's right. All right, well, thank you for being here with us tonight.
Thank you.
All right, and man number three, certainly last but not least, go ahead and tell our listeners about yourself.
Sure. I am a 35-year-old black male, obviously, and I am here to give the single man's perspective, since these two brothers have stated that they're in a loving and nurturing relationship with a woman that they've chosen to marry. I'm just the average guy, do average things, but definitely when I have an opportunity to talk to wonderful sisters like you two, it's always a pleasure. So I'm looking forward to this evening.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here with us tonight. So before we get started or really go into our topic, Sister Big Bones, do you have any thoughts or, what are your feelings about the topic that we're discussing tonight?
I am really excited. I know that's a word we use often, but it's just a pleasure to be able to interact with men that can articulate their thoughts. And they don't even have to be thoughts or opinions that I agree with, but just to hear, I'm looking forward to what they'll say and what they'll share and their insight, based on their experiences. Because as a female and as a female of color, I don't have their experiences. I don't see it through their lenses. And so I'm just really looking forward to what they have to share with us tonight.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think it's important for us to have these kind of discussions, especially about the stereotyping. I mean, we talk about stereotyping about black people in general, but I think for men especially, stereotyping has definitely damaged the black man's image. From in the eyes of their children, in the eyes of their spouses, in the eyes of society. And I think it's important for us to have these discussions, for us to change these stereotypes, to create these mind shifts and these paradigm shifts for people to see more than what the media portrays, or there's more to black men than what's on the news and what you're reading in papers and so forth. So I definitely commend each and every one of you guys for being willing to be on the show tonight and to share your perspectives and just to be open and candid about some of the things that you guys go through on a daily basis. So, again, thank you for being here. So, with that being said, we are going to move on with the conversation. And shout out to, I think I'm saying this right, Pianki. I think it's Pianki that's in the chat room right now. Pianki, they're joining us in the chat room just saying that it's important to try and dismiss the inadequacies that exist with the black male society in the U.S. as stereotypes and misconceptions. And just talking about emotional and not candid to reality. Okay, so thank you for being in the chat room, Pianki. I think that you're going to have a lot to share with us on the show tonight, and I'm looking forward to the comments that you'll be sharing in the chat room. So, guys, first, I will go around the circle and we'll give all of you guys an opportunity to just share maybe one. If you, I know there's several, but if you could just pick one stereotype or misconception that you've dealt with or continue to deal with or just totally frustrates you, we want to hear what that is. So we're going to start off with you, man number one.
All right. I think one of the most damaging stereotypes with black men and probably black people in general, but definitely geared towards us, is the stereotype of accepted mediocrity. I found that just about in any walk of life, when I'm in mixed company and they walk into any environment that is predominantly black or they see a group of African Americans working on something, there is an already accepted level that it will be subpar or mediocre at best. And sometimes I think that stereotype seeps into our own thinking, and especially our younger men, where it's become an accepted practice and that we don't strive for excellence like we should, because it's just been embedded in us that mediocrity is what's expected from us.
Mm. What are your thoughts about that, man number two?
You know, it's funny you said that, because I was thinking along the same lines. Because basically, in the environment that I've been in for the past 8-9 years in the sales industry, whenever you walk into a room, we're always the minority. And the assumption is that, oh, well, they're just loafing around. But in actual reality, in the sales industry I'm in, most of us black men and black women are in the top level. We're mostly President's Club women. So I agree exactly what man number one was just saying.
Yeah. And man number three, what are your thoughts?
Accepted mediocrity is unacceptable. At some point, you have to realize that you're worth more than another person's opinion of you. If you ever in your life agree with somebody's assessment of yourself and accept that as your destiny, then you've fallen victim to that mediocrity. If you choose to do so, then what do you have to look forward to? How can you move forward in life knowing that you have this much potential, just being a strong black man? And then that might be another thing that you think of as a misconception about black men, that all black men are strong. That's not the case. All men have weaknesses. All men, not just black men, but all men have weaknesses. And it's up to you to forge through and find out what your weakness is and conquer it. So if that's mediocrity in the workplace, your relationships, your family, whatever the case may be, you have to be able to say, I accept who I am and I strive to be better. So that way when someone looks at you, they have no reason but to say, you know, character building things about you, because that's the representation that you give on a daily basis. It's got to be your walk. It's got to be your talk. It's got to be something that you live with and permeate to any other person that's around you in your sphere. If that happens, then people will understand and begin to change their ideas about the black man. But when you see the dodo head on the corner with his pants hanging down and he's talking like he's never had an English class in his life, then you start to wonder, or actually you don't wonder anymore why people think that way of you. You know, so when we're talking about a stereotype, it's easy to fall victim to it because there's so many of them for you to fall victim to. And it's just sad to think that we have so much potential as people that we don't actually tap into that resource.
All right. Now, I know one of the things, when you read about different stereotypes and so forth, of black men, you hear a lot about what's being portrayed on television. So not just necessarily in the media, but even, you know, TV shows. And I know there was an example in one article I read that talked about how the images have been portrayed differently from shows like back in the 70s, like Good Times and Sanford and Son, you know, moving up now to some of these reality shows that are twisted, to say the least, for the most part. You know, how do we go about changing that stereotype if you constantly have things like this, you know, images like this being portrayed in the media and on TV, you know, talking about who the black man is or what the black man should be or who the black man should be. How do you deal with that if we're constantly seeing these negative images portrayed on TV? I know there's some that are positive, but for the most part, we do see quite a bit of the negative stuff. So how do we counteract that?
Well, you know, as a father, and this is man number one, as a father, I can't change what the Hollywood producers choose to put on television. But I have a little boy, and I can change how he presents himself to the world. So I think all of this starts at the family. And, you know, we have to change our families one by one. And I think if we do that and we fulfill our role as it should be in the family, that that would take care of itself. You know, it wouldn't be, unfortunately, there are a lot of us that do not do that. And so these images that we do see on television line up with the images that some people see in the real world. So it becomes reality to them. They say, well, I saw this and I saw it on television, so that's the way it always is. So I think our responsibility is to get our families in order, and everything else will take care of itself.
You know, let me just piggyback on what man number one said and expand a little bit, because I think it's baffling. We don't have that many men who stand out there and want to be examples for kids, right? Not everybody has a father in the household or a male figure that they can ask questions to. So what I do personally is the fact I take it, if I see a kid doing something wrong, I take it personal, especially if it's a black kid. I take it personal, because why? Because that could be my son. You know what I mean? That could be my son. So if I see somebody doing something wrong, it is my duty as a black man to set an example. You know, it's funny, sometimes living in some small towns, you don't see black male figures in any position that young black men can emulate to be, regardless of TV or not. That's all they see is on television. Everybody has access to TV or media or the computer. But in real life, you don't see most black men in position that you want to emulate. And if they are, they're too busy and they can't get out in the community. So I take it upon myself to do little things. I coach soccer. I coach basketball. Anything my kids do, I'm involved. You know what I mean? I'm probably one of the only few parents, black parents, that's involved out there, but I take it upon myself to do that. I set myself as an example, not just for my boys, but for other boys out there. That's my duty. That's my job.
Man number two, you mentioned a good point in terms of coaching, and maybe it's just something I noticed, and I didn't first become aware of it until I went to college, and I noticed that all of the black males there were, and I went to a predominantly white Southern Baptist Christian undergrad school, were there on athletic scholarships, and the black females were there on academic scholarships. Are we? Is that what we see in our black males? Is their athletic potential over their academic capacity and capability? Is that what we're raising our children to be, athletes instead of academic scholars?
That's a great question. Well, all I can say is I think maybe sometimes it's skewed by the media.
Hmm.
I mean, because not every black person or black male that go to school is on an athletic scholarship. I know I was, but then I started figuring out, you know what? I don't need an athletic scholarship. So I stopped. I mean, but I think it's just over-exaggerated by the media, and numbers are skewed. And sometimes the best way out, not everybody can afford to go to college based on their academic ability. I mean, different schools, different tax brackets, different facilities at the school gives you different SAT scores. I mean, so if you go there on an athletic scholarship, use it to your best ability. Realize that maybe only 1% of people who go to college will ever make it to professional athletes, to become professional athletes. You know what I mean? Know what you're there for. It's not for athletics. At the end of the day, you're not going to make it to the NBA or to the NFL. The chances are you'll be in corporate America. Use it to your best advantage. Use something from the athletic scholarship. That's my thought process. I don't know anything.
And I don't consider going to school on an athletic scholarship to be a disadvantage at all, in all honesty. I mean, any scholarship that you get to go to a university, I think once you step foot on campus, everybody's starting from ground zero. So it's not, from my perspective, it's not as if the individual there on an athletic scholarship is prohibited from being an academic. You know, I just see that as he said, academic scholarships, scholarships in general are not always, there isn't always a black and white criteria that will get you the scholarship. So whatever means you can use to get there, I don't see a problem with. So if on average more, you know, let's just say at your particular university, more students were there on an academic or athletic scholarships that were black, I don't see that as any sort of disadvantage or any sort of handicap for them as a student once they got there.
I totally agree with you two gentlemen. This is man number three. When has it ever been glamorous to be a teacher? You hear so much about kids raising kids, and when you have that, you have basically a lost generation trying to teach the next generation how to live as acceptable black men in a society. I can do but so much. I don't have any kids, so I don't have someone that I shape on a daily basis. But if I did, why would I impress upon them that their only way to make it is through athletics? We all love to play sports, at least most of us love to play sports, but I realized I just wasn't good enough. I had to do something else to make sure that you know, money came into my household, food stayed on my plate. But at the end of the day, if that's how you got there, then great. You did something that you loved as a kid, that you played for free. But I think the glamorization of sports and athletics and then the compensation that you receive for being an all-star at your particular position or field, that makes people see a quicker way to get to where they want to be. What they don't see is the sacrifice. What they don't see is the hard work, the determination that was put into that mechanism. If you don't have that kind of drive and you don't allow yourself to understand that it did take more than just waking up with a God-given ability, you know, then you're going to look at LeBron James and say, oh, that's what I want to do. And I want to make that kind of money. I want to be that kind of megastar. And then you see him on all the Nike ads. He's wearing the latest sneakers that you want, and they put that on television. And then all of a sudden now you have the brand-new LeBron James or the brand-new Michael Jordans, and this is supposed to make you a better athlete. And by being a better athlete, you can make this kind of money. And by making this kind of money, you get the riches, the fame, the women. All these things are balled into one and force-fed upon you just by hitting the power button on your television. But you don't find that in a book, or at least you don't recognize that it's in a book. You know, some of the most vivid stories are in books, but when was the last time you read a book? When was the last time you made your child read a book outside of what their curriculum is? When was the last time a teacher really wanted to mold your child? You know, with the fear of your parents retaliating against your instruction or undermining your authority, and your kid actually being a disruptive force within that class, you know, I can see why being a teacher isn't glamorous, because that's probably the hardest work you have to do to not only teach a child, but to break what they've already learned and then reteach them. That's a lot of work. That is a whole lot of work.
Definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mind Shift Talk Radio with Stacey Emery and Juanita Sister Big Bones Warren. And tonight we're discussing the black male, is he misunderstood? And so we're having a great roundtable. And again, you know, guys, thanks for being here. I'm loving the information that you're sharing and just how honest and open you're being about these topics. And I want to piggyback on something that, or just ask a little bit more about what man number three just said in terms of the education piece and about how it's not glamorous to be a teacher. And I sometimes feel like there's too much pressure being placed on teachers at times to teach our children and to instill these values in our children. And it goes back to what both man number one and two started off saying about how they're actively involved in their children's lives and how they take it upon themselves to not only coach and train their own children, but also other children as well. And As I said, we have one person in the chat room, I think I'm saying it right, forgive me if I'm not, Pianki, that's in the chat room, made a comment and said that basically, you know, with over 70% plus of black households being headed by single mothers, it, you know, the odds are against young black boys, you know, being introduced to manhood ideas. So it goes back to what you just said, man number three. It starts from home, and it starts with us as parents, or I guess now we're talking about the black males, so I won't say us, I'm not in that category, but just about, you know, black men really standing up, whether it's your child or not, but just taking a vested interest in our youth, right? So I definitely appreciate that. Now, we have quite a few things on the list that we want to discuss, and I know we're probably going to run out of time, but we're going to try to get as much of this done as possible. And so we've already talked about, you know, the family part of it and also the career part about the stereotypes that are in the career or the workplace. But we also want to talk about the relationship piece, and I think it's fitting now since we're coming off the part about the families. We want to talk about some of the misconceptions or some of the stereotypes that are out there about black men in relationships. So what do you guys think about relationships and some of the things that's being said about black males in relationships?
What, black men actually in relationships? They doing that now? Where do they do that at? What?
Where do they do that at?
They do that? What? No, nah, get out of here. That's a misconception.
Well, you know, we got man one and man two talking about their happily married college sweethearts and stuff. And, you know, man number three, I know we're working on you too. So, you know, tell us.
Yeah. I am a daily work in progress. But I will say this, as I've grown into my 30s, and once again, I'm 35, I find that what I did in my 20s isn't as fun as what I would like to do in my 30s as far as a relationship goes. So the evenings of excessive drinking, you know, whoremongering, you know, just out all times of the night, just doing God knows what under the sun and under the moon itself, it's not the same. It doesn't provide the same, you know, desire and excitement that it once did. So as I'm changing as a person, I find that my tastes are changing in women, and that what I would like out of a relationship is not as, I guess, one-night standish as it once had been. So as you evolve as a person and you start to realize that there are more things out there available to you, more than, you know, a good evening or, you know, a nice season. You know, everybody has that person that you run to in times of need. You know, everyone has experienced that, you know, whether or not you took advantage of it sexually or if it was just for conversation, however the case may have been, but someone that you knew was going to be there. Now, the reason that person is there is because there's no one filling their time. So they're easily and readily capable to indulging in whatever it is that you want to indulge in. So that means that there's not only my thirst for having a meaningless relationship that's being quenched, but that also means that because this woman is so available to me, that maybe this happens often. Maybe she sets herself up for being in this position, and that it's known that she's in this position. Whether you acknowledge it or not, it's just something you feel. Like, you know when someone's hungry for something. You know when somebody wants something a little bit more than you want to give. And then when you get that feeling, especially from someone, say, you're not overly attracted to, or someone that doesn't pique your curiosity in a manner that allows you to just say, you know what, I'm going to give in to this person, either male to female or female to male. If you don't dig a person the way they dig you, it's just not going to work. Like I've always told, you know, any woman that I've dealt with, you have to love me more than I love you, and I have to love you more than you love me. I mean, seriously, because if you think about it, I want to wake up and tell my woman I love you, and she tell me I love you more. And then I prove to her that I love her more. And then she proves to me that she loves me more. So I got to step back on my horse and be like, no, I love you more. Come on, baby. Stop that. You know, this is what I'm talking about. That's something that makes you smile, you know. That's something that I don't know if I'm like, I'm just entrapped in this like glorified, you know, self-made image of the relationship, because I've never been married. So I just assume that when I get married, it's going to be like a sex-a-palooza. Our minds are just going to meld into some big ball just of energy, and then we're just going to have such expressive conversation, and it's just going to be so beautiful. But when I talk to married folks, they're like, eh.
Hold on.
Let me
interject real quick, okay?
Go ahead, brother, please.
Okay. I told you. My wife and I have been together for 13 years, right?
You.
I'm only 39, right? But here's the biggest thing. In all my time of having other girlfriends, she was always there. She was my friend. Nothing else. Very platonic. Very
okay.
In-depth conversations. Very in-depth about everything. About everything from raising kids, politics, religion, everything. We talk for hours, okay? Through all my years of being a whoremonger and all that good stuff, she was always there. But here's the
point. Right.
But here's the best
thing. Here's the word
thing,
of the
though.
Day.
But here's the best thing. When you stop and you look and you think about what you want in life, forget about the sex, okay? Because after a while, that's not the most important part of a relationship. The most important part of a relationship is conversation, is communication, mm-hmm. is being able to sit down and talk to that person for hours about everything. I tell people all the
Preach.
Time.
I stopped listening when you said it's not about sex, so I'm sorry.
But don't get me wrong.
Hey,
that's
important. That's a fine conversation right there.
It adds to the relationship. But at the end of the day, I'd rather stay home with my wife than go out and hang out with my boys. That's my thought process.
That's right.
I mean, that's my thought process. I mean, really and truly, that's my thought process. Don't get me wrong. It was nice being 20, 21, 27. All those 80s were wonderful. But now at the end of the day, what haven't I done? There's nothing I haven't done, which you'll probably come to that realization yourself soon, too. What haven't I done? You know what I mean? Then you start thinking there's more to life than waking up next to a different woman once or twice a week or three times a week. At the end of the day, that gets old.
Well, here's my question. This may be my perception, maybe, but, you know, you guys are both talking about your whore-mongreling days or however you put it. And you guys are talking about the evolution that takes place in terms of how you get to the point where you finally say, you know, enough of this already. I'm ready to be in a committed relationship. And again, this may be my perception, but why is it that it seems like it takes longer for black men to have that evolution versus white men? You know, when you look at...
Does it really take longer for us? Or is that a misconception?
It could be, again.
The black woman misconception about the black man.
This is the black woman, exactly. So when, you know, for example, I'm meeting people on a day-to-day basis, even, you know, my employees and so forth, and I'm looking at, you know, guys that are as young as 21, 22 that, you know, are so happy to say that they're married to their wives. But then I look at my brothers that are like 35, 40, 45, they're like, nah, I'm not there yet. So why is that?
I think we are more open about our sexuality and what we're doing. I'll just say this. I have a few white friends, and our conversations all from growing up till now have not changed. It's no different talking to another black guy. It's all the same conversation.
Yeah.
So I think that
sports
our sexual exploits are just more out there than theirs are. We're just more comfortable.
Mm.
We have locker room conversations outside of the locker room, and they don't.
Yeah. I know as far as I go, just wow. I mean, this is a heavy topic for me right here. I can't even lie, because as I said earlier, as I evolved, it wasn't necessarily anything that I did. It was trying at something and not realizing I was trying, and then accepting that I was actually trying to do something. And what I mean by that was I'm getting into a monogamous relationship, something that I had not ever sought after before, and then them failing. So in me, it was just more so time had sped up to a point where I'm like, all right, well, I'm in monogamous relationships. So why is it that called a relationship? Why aren't we, quote unquote, boyfriend, girlfriend? What am I doing differently than being in a relationship but not having the title? So once I realized that I had everything but the title, I accepted the fact that I wanted to have a title and be monogamous with just this woman. Now, I try. I find things that I can tweak. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. So I change this, I change that. I do this, I do that. Consider this, consider that. I keep doing it until I find the perfect blend. And then just when I think I found it, some woman tells me, you have not found it yet. That is not the right elixir, Mr. Jones. And I realize that. And so I got to go back to the drawing board. So just when I think I know it, it's not the case. That is definitely not the case. So it's like a growing process, even in being or in the desire to be in a monogamous relationship. Or what's funny is I'd want to be with a woman in a monogamous relationship, but I'm not quite sure if I want to get married yet. Like, I know marriage is the next step, but I think black men, and I don't think this is a misconception, but maybe not the overall point of view of all black men, I think that a man, and especially a black man, gets ready when he's tired of chasing. And he gets ready for marriage when he's tired of chasing. So once you lose the fire of the chase, the woman that is before you at that moment, who gives you that safety, that feeling of security, that you know this woman loves you to no end, and she's there at the precise moment that you finally decide to put down that player card, that's when you get married. I don't think black men wake up in the morning and say, today is the day I'm going to get married. I don't know any black man who just woke up and said that. I don't. I mean, it may be some out there. Maybe some new from birth. But overall, I don't think it happens. So if it does, I'd be surprised.
I think a lot of that also, because I understand what the host is saying. I understand what you're saying, too. This is man number one. But I think to a certain extent in certain cultural environments, there's a stigma to not being married. It's like even like man number two said, he has the same conversations with his friends of other races. And I think that the desires, I mean, everyone has the same desires, but I think that culturally, and a lot of our families and in our society, at least in this country overall, there's a much higher tolerance for us being single. Like, as a black man, you can be single up to 40 and nobody is like, man, what's wrong with you? You know, where, and I think in certain other cultures, and I'm probably stereotyping here, but, you know, I think in other cultures, at a certain point, it's culturally unacceptable or frowned upon for you to be single. It's like, if you're single and you're this age, something is wrong with you. And even if that person still has a hidden player card, like man number two said, ours is out in the open and theirs is a little more subtle and hidden. Even if they have a hidden player card, just culturally, that there's a certain pressure, I believe, to get into a monogamous public relationship that we don't have. So I don't think that we're necessarily less relationship oriented than other races. It's just that we've accepted, just because of how our families have been broke. You said 70% of kids are raised by single parents. So we've come to accept that as a social norm, whereas I think a lot of other people haven't.
Great point.
I think it's very sad, too. You know, you expect to see a single mom these days. Not just a single mom, but a single mom with multiple kids. And that expectation is not derived from my imagination. It comes from my dating pool. in my 20s, I dated single women, no kids, all the time. In my 30s, I had to make a conscious decision that if I did meet somebody with a child, that I would at least give them an opportunity. And the reason I say that is because I've always wanted to do something first. I wanted to be the first man to make love to this woman. And that's hard to do. And as a matter of fact, I've never been able to do that. So just going to put that out there. All right. I wanted to be the first person to have a child by this woman. I didn't want her to experience something that I've never experienced. And in that way, she kind of like spoils it for me like it's a movie. Like, why you tell me to end it? I didn't want to know that. I wanted to see it for myself. You know, I want to do something that we can do together and indulge in together for the first time. I wanted to enjoy being married to a woman who's never been married before, something I can do for the first time with this person. So that way, the euphoria of the situation, it doesn't just extend through me, but through the both of us. Now, in my dating pool, though, there's a lot of divorcees. There's a lot of single women with children or child. And because it's more prominent as I've gotten older, I started to have to open up my circle and allow women that I hadn't thought of before into my circle. And I know that may be selfish because I am the product of a single family home. My mother was married but got divorced, and, you know, I'm the product of that relationship. So, and actually, to be honest with you, I'm a bastard. I was born out of wedlock. They got married, you know, and I was walking down, you know, rings. I think I was holding something at the wedding. I don't even remember the wedding. But at the end of the day, I'm the same thing that I was running away from in my 20s and then realizing that I was a part of in my 30s. And it took my mother to tell me, like, hey, why are you so opposed to dating a woman with a child? Not even children, but a child. Why are you so opposed to doing that if you're the product of the same circumstance? So I'm like, really? You really going to hit me with reality when I'm talking about my dating life? Come on, Mom. Stop. You know? Like, stop playing. Don't do that.
You
that's
make a
so
good
unfair.
Point, man, number three. And as an aside, before I ask my question, you can still make love to a woman for the first time, no matter how many partners she may have had before you. She may have never been made love to, but that's a different show. But
right,
to your point, what responsibility does males or black men play in the whole single mother piece? Like, what role do they play? What responsibility in that? Because I mean, it didn't happen on her own.
You are correct. That is like, do you have 2 hours? I mean, we need the extra hour to move into that, because overall, it starts with not the men you see before you today, not your immediate circle. But this was like generational. This is maybe 2 generations ago where it started becoming the norm for men to walking out on their family. Because what I know of, like, my grandfather's parents, all right, so my great-grandparents, they had, what, I think 8 kids? If you had less than 4 kids, your family just wasn't normal. Like, you're supposed to be a child-having family, you know, who worked together, loved together, ate together, communicated all the time, expressed ideas, shared thoughts. That's what you were supposed to do. A large family was like a symbol of the black community. It showed that you were prospering. It showed everyone that you had a loving relationship. So then, I don't know who it was, but whoever this one person was, let's call him man number four. All right? Man number four decides, I'm tired of this. I'm lead. And then everybody's looking at him like he's an outcast, like, oh, this guy left his family. How could you do that? And then they see him having a good time, and all of a sudden they're thinking, well, the grass may be greener on the other side. So once it becomes an epidemic to turn your back on your family, then it became acceptable because more people were doing it. And because more people are doing it, you have single mothers. So now you have women with multiple kids. You have, you know, women with one child. You have a generation that's now lost because one guy decided that it wasn't acceptable to be in a struggle with his family. He much rather struggle on his own and not have to face his kids, not have to face his wife, and have that shame of being, you know, inadequate in some area, be it financially, you know, emotionally, however he was inadequate. You know, the thing is, you got to build people up. People get torn down daily. It's a grind. If you don't get it from a stranger, if you don't get it from someone you're in business with, if you don't get it from your family, and that's the worst kind of degradation that you can receive. If someone is that you love and care for doesn't show you that emotional support, I mean, what do you do? I mean, some people just aren't strong enough to say, your words don't shape me. You know, your thoughts of me don't shape me. You know, whatever you think of me, it may not be the case. And I'm sure you brothers, you know, can understand what I'm talking about.
And this may be theoretical. I mean, this may be theoretical, but when he talks about the past, for black men in the past, quite honestly, there weren't a lot of opportunities. I mean, there weren't a lot of places publicly to allow you to feel good about yourself. So your family really was the one place where a man could feel important in past generations, where he could obtain respect and where he could be somebody. And as society has evolved and allowed us more opportunities, see, for other races, the opportunities to feel that way were always there in all areas of life. But for us, those generations didn't really have that. So I believe that the families were near and dear. And, you know, I think as opportunities arose, perhaps, and this is, like I said, theoretical, I think that somehow we lost the importance of the family because, like you were saying, if, you know, one person left and the grass was green, because he had an opportunity to go do other things. You know, his forefathers didn't have that. His forefathers couldn't. You're going to leave your family. Where are you going to go? You know, I mean, what you going to
Exactly.
You know, so.
What you going to do?
Let me go ahead and just hop in here for a quick second, guys, because you guys are on it, and clearly we're going to run out of time. So I've taken the liberty of extending the show because we also have a caller in queue that wants to join us in the conversation. So are you guys willing to hang out with us for about an extra 30 minutes tonight?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So we're going to take a quick break, do a station ID, and then we'll be right back with our caller in queue.
Mind Shift Radio.
Again, thank you for tuning in to Mindshift Talk Radio. I'm your host, Stacey Emery, joined by the phenomenal Juanita Sister Big Bones Warren. And tonight we're discussing the black male, is he misunderstood? So we're having a great roundtable discussion. Man number one, two, and three are really, you know, just blessing us with the knowledge and the wisdom and all the nuggets. And so we're curious to know what our listeners have to say about the topic as well. And so we have a caller on the line that wants to go ahead and share in the conversation as well. So we have a sister from Chicago. Welcome to Mind Shift Talk Radio.
Hotep family, I just wanted to reiterate what was said earlier about the mindset of the black man, I guess I want to say. One thing about we need to acknowledge is that the difference between how we learn is blatant. See, black people learn from the neck down. White people learn from the neck up. And think about that just for a moment and what that means. okay, we can go into sports, we can go into success if this is what we want to call it, okay, but for the gentleman stating earlier about the true degradation of the family, well, yeah, but know this. You have to realize how greatly and how long you have been studied. See, black people's problems get major support, not support to end it, but support to keep it going. And the thing that you must realize is that if it's too big to fail, it is too big to go to jail. You've got several strategies implemented towards everything about you to stop you from producing, stop you from rising, and most importantly, stop you from thinking. And thinking is still not against the law. And I'm not going to get into what I really feel about a man and several women because I know I'm going to catch hell and somebody's going to probably shoot me. But you know what, brother, regardless of whether you think it's or not, a man is not designed to be with one woman. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not getting into that.
Oh.
I'm not getting into that. And I'm not on your side in the aspect of saying that just go get a bunch of cootie coos. Okay, look, at one point, you're right, there was a great amount of members of the family. Who do you think was looking at that? The ones who know that that is what works. You must increase your numbers. You have to. How in the world do you intend to be able to continue on unless there's less of you? The problem with us is this. Yeah, I know that the black man is misunderstood. We know the black man is targeted, but you know who's targeted more than him? We sisters. Do you know why? Because we will rise. We will rise. We will get that education. We will go ahead and be amongst the executives. But we got to take off who we are. How is that rising? How is that success? Did someone mention earlier about somebody buying some kind of car for $750,000?
What?
No.
Okay, I get that wrong. Sorry, it's probably another show. Okay, but the point I'm trying to make is that we go ahead and base our success on what we own and not what we control. You black men have to start teaching these black children. It has to start with the black kids. And now at this point, you can't fix a bunch of sick individuals who have no desire to acknowledge the problems that we have. But you got to start with the babies, and it must start with black male teachers. Now, for the gentleman who said that he takes the effort to teach his children this, teach his children that. Well, good for you, because guess what? If you don't do it, who else will? And that's how that kid rises, when he's taught by the parent, not by some program, not by some school aftercare thing. It works better when the parent. There's no way in the world no parent should go to a doctor and say, shouldn't they be doing this by now? Okay. The thing that we must realize, people, is that at one point when we did have big families, someone was looking. An entity that's running this planet was looking. We got to stop that. We have to stop that. And look at the kingdom. The kingdom is broken because the king has been kicked out. He's been kicked out. And the thing that most black men fail to realize is why. You got no clue to the power that you hold between your legs. You really don't know. You don't know, but someone else does. And because they know more about you than you know about you, guess what? We continue to accept things. Well, what's going to happen now? What they going to do with this now? What's going to happen to this lot over here instead of us coming together and getting that lot and starting a garden and feeding our own children? Okay?
Wow.
These women, these girls, if these girls do not realize how greatly they need their daddies, they need their daddies. Daddy is needed. Everyone knows who we are except us. And we can continue to have these conversations about what we've been through, what this and that. But what we going to do about it, y'all? What we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? And if we don't start teaching each other, ourselves, I keep saying this, we're going to be what used to exist on this planet. and our numbers are reducing. I have to, I'm going to throw this in because this is not the subject, but I have to throw this in. Article last week in the Red Eye magazine about this, the topic was, is this a new focal point or a new rise for black gays? I find it damn, I'm going to just put it out there, I find it damn pathetic that any black gay person says that they will fight to the death for gay rights, but you won't fight for your own personal rights. Think about that just for a moment. You'll fight to have acceptance of what? Of what? And you have no desire to continue on with the opposite sex. We in some trouble. We are in some serious trouble.
I can definitely understand why you feel that way as a black woman, because if there's no one out there to procreate with, then it doesn't matter what kind of power we have between our legs, because you're not getting it. And that's
damn right. Thank you.
I can fully understand that. Now, I accept that not everybody's the same. Everybody's not the same. Everybody has different tendencies, different desires. Great. Now, I don't ostracize gays simply because it's become such a strong community that you have to acknowledge their presence. Whereas
no
before,
one says ignore their presence.
I remember
no
at
one
a time,
says ignore that. No
right.
one says ignore
no,
it.
Well,
by all accounts,
when
I'm
was
not
in the
saying
military.
Ignore it. But I put like this,
no, but,
it does not matter gay or straight. You on the list to be eliminated. That is a problem.
Right, but what I remember was a time where, let's say, late 90s, I joined the military. And I left, went to Germany, came back, say, 2 years later. And within 2 years, I saw a dramatic change in the dating scene and how readily acceptable it was to be gay and openly gay. Okay, so with that being the case, now what I didn't see, what was once behind closed doors, is now wide open, knocking at my front door, and I get to see it at any public venue that I'm at. So, okay, now you start to understand that there is a community that maybe was under an umbrella before, but now they're just out. Everyone
I ask
in full
you this,
view to be
are
seen,
you aware?
And that's great. So with that being the case, here it is, it's almost made you be force-fed something that you didn't really think about before. So now your mind is open and conscious to the fact that there is another group of people that you thought was just supposed to be hidden and tucked away. Now, with that kind of change in the dating climate, you have people who, you know, are racist. You have people who are anti-Semitic. You have people who just generally dislike a group of people. So it now includes gays. And that kind of change and that kind of reality, that means there's gay men, gay women. So gay men were once straight men, or at least thought to be. So that means they're leaving their families behind. The gay women aren't wanting to be with gay men. With straight men. So now that leaves the straight men behind. So you're getting a lot of influence from this homosexuality. And with that change, now you can understand why the dating climate is so different. You used to be able to say, if I go to Atlanta, the women outnumber the men 10-1, easy. You got to come to Atlanta. So I would think that it's plentiful, that it's bountiful to be in Atlanta and to find a woman of your desires, your dreams, and everything that you may have ever thought of in a woman. But what I realize is that about 3 out of 10 are gay. About another 2 are married. So now you went from 10-1 to 5-1. Well, 1 out of the remaining 5 is ugly, that you wouldn't even want to get with. So now you're down to 4-1. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that go on. I mean, let's not fly. We all like to be attracted.
I beg you to consider your history and realize that the Atlanta child murders wasn't just about taking out children. Know exactly what was truly going on with those poor children and those victims of the government and what they were taking from those kids, because I find it damn ironic that Atlanta is the gay capital now. Those children, See, blacks are very important and very needed. You don't know what you're made of, bro. You don't know what's in your glands, what's in your, what's between your legs, and what kind of thing it produces, and the things that's in your body that are greatly needed for another entity on this planet. I'm going to leave it at that.
There's a lot more than you can possibly fathom as to what the true nature of the Atlanta child murders was about. Can you guys hear me?
Well,
sister from Chicago, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. I just have to say, first, I got to thank you, sister, for even calling in because, I mean, yeah, you have been amazing with all the information you're sharing. And I would definitely like to invite you to come on another show because we just don't have enough time to go into all the stuff. I mean, I'm sure that you're going to bless us with so much wisdom and knowledge, but we can't do it all in this hour. So thank you for calling in. And I do want to have the guys, give the guys an opportunity to, you know, answer some of the questions or some of the concerns that you raised during the short time that you've been on the show. So please reach out to us on Facebook. If you are not friends with us on Facebook, please friend Mindshift Talk Radio on Facebook, or feel free to reach out to me by email at mindshifttalkradio@gmail.com. I would definitely like to connect with you, okay?
Thank you very much. But I don't like Facebook. I think we better ask who's behind it. That's just me. I don't like Facebook.
Well, send me an email.
But either which way, I appreciate that. I have your email, but I just don't like Facebook.
All right. Well, you have a great night and be blessed, okay?
Thank you.
All right, guys. So, man number three, thank you. I know that took a lot. And I am curious
to hear
your thoughts,
brother.
Man number one. Huh?
I just said I'm a patient, brother. I was going to let her vent. I thought we were going to cut the cord, but then, you know, we kept going. I was like, all right, let me just jump in here real quick.
So, man number one, man number two, what are your thoughts about some of the things that were just discussed?
Wow. Wow.
I second that wow. I'll just say it was a lot to take in. And I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with all of it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I don't agree with all of it, but I respect the opinions, and I, having not researched all of it, I don't know, but it definitely, I don't necessarily agree with all of it. I'll just leave it there.
You know, she made a great point, though. She made some great points. Some of her points were a little far-fetched, to be honest. You know what I mean? With regards to our society, I mean, everything we do has become too easy to be done. It's too easy to walk away from your family. It's too easy to have mothers raise kids. It's too easy. There are no repercussions. It's too easy to see a mom with three kids and a father off acting as if he doesn't have any kids at home or kids out of wedlock. It's too easy. Growing up for me in a different society, I guess that's the difference.
But that was my whole point earlier when I said that there's not a social repercussion. Nobody thinks that it's odd when they see us behaving that way.
It's too,
you know.
Yeah.
And in other societies, it's odd. You know, you look at somebody. You know, I like in my. I'll just say I live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and there's a lady across the street from me that's a single white mother. She has two children, and my neighbors look at her like, "What's wrong with you?" You know, and I've lived, you know, in black neighborhoods where almost every mother was there with two children by herself,
right,
and nobody thought anything about it. You know,
right.
So just that, I think society and peer pressure from our group is what has to cure us. You know, we like one thing she said that I totally agree with is we can't wait for somebody else to
That's
fix
right.
our problems.
That's exactly right. Sometimes we are our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Instead of saying something that's going to offend but yet motivate, we'd rather not say anything. I mean, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for men to walk away from their wives or most of all their kids. It's not acceptable. There is no way in the world I would call anybody a man that walks away from his responsibility. You know the person you're getting in bed with. You know when you have sex, the consequences high that you're going to have a kid. And when that kid comes out, you should not, it's not his fault that the mom and you don't get along. So why should they suffer? Step up and own up to your own responsibility. You know what I mean? It's not the kid's fault, and yet they're paying the consequences day in, day out. Man number three said something about single moms. I used to be a teacher for a year. I taught first grade for 1 year, and I doff my hat to your mom. Obviously, she did a fantastic job. But as a black man,
I'll tell her.
You can go into a classroom and walk and see all the single black boys in a classroom. You can pick them all out. You can pick them all out. It is not – women do a fantastic job, but every boy needs a male figure in his life because the effects are unbelievable.
I agree 100%.
I would caveat that with a positive male figure because too many women are – under the notion that having a piece of man is better than having no man at all, so they allow not positive examples of males and men around their boys so that he has a male figure. So I would just add a positive
Judy,
male
for me,
role model.
When I say a male figure, I don't know anybody in my life that's not a positive role model. I mean, in my life particularly. When I talk about a black man, that's a distinction right there, a black man. You know what I mean? Men step up for their responsibilities. That's a black man. You know
and
what I mean?
Feel you, man number two, but I'm just saying the reality of what I witness daily amongst sisters and non-black women that are dating black men are dating, many of them are dating black males and not black men by your definition.
There you go. There's a difference.
Yeah. Very true.
I mean.
Very true. Now, I've been in a relationship where, you know, the woman I dated, she had a son, and she really didn't know what to do with him because he was at the age where, you know, you start smelling yourself. And, gentlemen, I'm sure you went through this yourself where you think you're a man way before you really are one. You don't understand what responsibility and everything that is incorporated into being a man, and not even just a man, but a black man. So he thought he had some sort of birthright to the throne, even though his father wasn't there, and it was obviously some sort of discord between the mother and the father at that point that allowed the man to just feel like, all right, I'm just not going to be with my child. He even started a new family and left his blood child behind, which was something ridiculous to me in thought. So here it is. Me stepping into a role that, A, I've never been in before. So it's the first time I've ever dated a woman with a child. Now, I've, you know, been in a relationship, excuse me, I've never been in a relationship with a woman with a child, but I've dated women with children, and that was just more of a casual thing. So here it is. I actually have almost a daily presence in this young man's life. And I remember our first encounter between the mother who I was dating and her son. It was combustible because he thought he was more man than me. And I had to set him straight from that first time out the gate. Like, you think you're a man because you're the only male in the house? That doesn't give you the right. So when I initially checked him in front of not only the mother but the grandmother, they're looking at me like, we finally got a man in the house who can set this young man straight. But the problem was, as you begin to teach more often, the women in the house began to say, oh, you're too hard on him. You're not loving him the right way. You're not doing it the right way. Let me do it because you're hurting his feelings. What? Are you serious? Now, I wasn't cussing the young man. I wasn't doing any of that. But if there was a teaching moment, let me teach. If there was something he needed to understand, let me let him understand it through my words and actions, okay? I can show you how to do something. You don't pick up on it, like most young men don't. Well, let me tell you how to do it, all right? Well, you don't even remember how I told you how to do it? Okay, well, let me show you again, okay? The second time is going to be a little bit more painful than the first time because now you're not receiving information, all right? Never laid my hands on him, anything of that sort. But at the end of the day, when I was finally told by my ex, hey, let me do it, I backed off completely. She's asking me, or actually telling me, well, I don't want my son to be a punk. I don't want him to be, you know, no, I don't want him to be gay, you know, because he has, you know, like a couple feminine qualities, but, you know, just, I don't know, maybe as a kid, sometimes you just don't, you don't understand something, and you just fall one way or the other. I don't know how it all works, but at the end of the day, she had reservations about his masculinity, and I can see it, but I didn't say anything, because at this point, you told me to be hands off, so now I don't even know where to jump in, where to come back, where to go in, where to pull out. I have no idea, because not only do I have mom looking after me on how to raise her child, the grandmother was in the home too. So, you know, grandma and the grandchild, you say anything cross to a grandmother's grandchild, it's a wrap. You know, like you can't do anything wrong in a grandmother's eyes. I've been in that situation
too. You're saying the little boy was like soft and she was concerned about him being gay or so forth. So are we saying that as long as there's a black male in his life that he's not going to be gay? I mean, that contradicts what you just talked about.
No, I don't even want that thought to even enter, because if you're gay and you don't know it and you're teaching a young man how to be a man, you're going to teach him what you know. So if you don't know you're gay, but you are and clearly are, a little of that is going to get into whatever it is that that young man is doing. So that's where you have to be more, I guess, open to what it is you're actually seeing. Recognize signs. You know, there's some things that black men shouldn't do.
I made a comment earlier.
Yes.
I made a comment earlier with regards to in the classroom, and guest number three hit on it. The feminine qualities. You can have feminine qualities and not be gay, but they're feminine qualities that boys pick up around only being around women.
Yep.
You know, and that's exactly what he just said. And no, he's not seen as being gay, but they're feminine qualities that aren't present in men that you see in boys when they're younger, when they're raised by single moms. Certain things boys don't do. I mean, certain things boys don't do. You know, if a boy's in the house, we have a rule in my house. Say, hey, man, are you injured? Are you hurt? Okay? It's okay to cry, but there's certain things that boys just don't do. You pick them up, you're like, that's kind of strange. What's going on? And you can see that in boys that are raised by just women. I mean, you guys do a fantastic job, but there needs to be good male role models, like Juju said earlier. I mean, there's certain things.
Yeah, I second that. I can definitely tell. I work a lot with youth sports, and you can definitely tell when a boy is raised by just a single mother. And it's not that he's a bad kid.
Right.
It's not that he's necessarily it's hard to verbalize, but
he the one they call a little sissy.
No.
But it's not even that. It's a way of it's a way of handling their problems.
Right.
It's the way that they go about handling their problems. Not so much that they're softer or that they cry more, but there's just a different way that they handle conflict and they handle circumstances that the boys with two parents that just typically handle differently. You know, since I don't date men, I don't know how that manifests itself later in life. You know, I can only speak about on the athletic field.
Right.
But I'll just say, you know, in athletics, I can attest to the fact that I can see a difference also.
Okay. You guys are funny. I know that initially, I know we're close to running out of time. And again, for those of you that are listening right now, you're listening to Mindshift Talk Radio with Stacey Emery and Juanita's sister, Big Bones Warren. And we're talking about the black man, is he misunderstood? And I guess now it's getting a little lighter towards the end when we're talking about the athletics and so forth. I have my own opinions about that, just considering the fact that I'm a single mother of a boy. So I'm not going to touch that right now because we'll probably start fighting on the show. But, you know, one final piece, because, you know, initially when we talked about some of the topics that we wanted to discuss with you guys, we thought about Michael Jackson. And it kind of ties into some of the stuff that you guys discussed tonight. But, you know, we can say that Michael Jackson did come from a two-parent household. Parents were married the whole time. He had the strong Joe there to be an influence in his life. But, you know, we know what happened with Mike. So what do you guys have to say when you hear Michael Jackson? What comes to mind? And where do you think we probably failed in that area?
What happened to Michael?
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, you did not. Who was that?
What happened to Michael?
Man number two.
What happened to Michael? I missed it.
You know,
I'll take a stab at this. You ready?
I'm ready.
I find it so infuriating what we do to our black superstars. I find it so infuriating. Michael Jackson was not above the law, right? When I hear of white superstars doing things like there was a white music producer that killed somebody, never did they attack him. Never did the whites attack him. He was under the radar. It was in the news for a little bit, then it went under the radar. We tend to sometimes crucify our own, which I think is a negative. Michael had all his issues, but yet Michael was also there for us as a people. You know what I mean? He did.
I don't know what you mean, because Michael ain't ever did nothing for me. Straight up.
Provided you
could help
music
me out.
To listen to.
Growing up for me, where I grew up, Michael was nice to emulate. Michael gave sunshine to a cloudy day, right?
That's when he still had the throw and everything. The
That's when Michael was a black man.
Right.
But he did those
things. Oh,
you're
talking about Big Nose Mike. Oh, Big Nose Mike was all that.
Before he had the reconstructive surgery.
Yeah. Nose spread across his face. You knew he was a brother because he had an afro and had
but
skin
not, pigmentation. But now listen to this part. Michael was confused, man. He was young, growing up in the era. Back to our topic. There weren't that many black people in position that Michael could emulate to be like when he was growing up. All he saw on TV were white people, and he might have confused being famous and being wealthy and being popular with being white. So Michael had more psychological issues than we know what's going on with Michael. So, I mean, I'm not defending him. You know what I mean? There was nobody there. He was the first one that was out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you say Michael Jackson, I think psychological issues. You hit it on the head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He had psychological issues. He really did. But what child star doesn't? Who doesn't? I mean, his
Gary Coleman, Emmanuel Lewis, Corey Feldman.
So I think that's a perfect example, though. I think it's a perfect example of what you guys talk about. It's one thing to have a male present in the child's life. You know, we know that his dad was there the whole time, but it's also about what that parent is teaching. You know, it's about that quality that Juanita talked about earlier. You can have someone there and they're teaching all the wrong things.
Right.
And at the end of the day, he was still getting his direction and his guidance from what he saw in the media as well.
Right.
So it goes back to everything we talked about. So I appreciate you guys bringing that up because, I mean, I think we need to make that very clear, especially for the women that are raising young men to hear that it's not about just having a body there, just to have someone present, but it has to be someone that can make a positive impact on the life of the child.
But I think sometimes in those single women's lives, you have people, you have fathers, you have brothers, you have cousins that are men. It doesn't have to be somebody that's sharing a room or a life with that single mother. There's so many male role models around you. You just, it's not just the person that you're in love with or trying to be, but there's, I mean, I don't know. There's so many other role models out there. I mean, you have three guys on the phone. You have a referee, an athletic referee. You have a young guy on the phone and myself. There's so many other people that young boys or young men should emulate. We put ourselves out sometimes, and sometimes there is no response as to what we can do. I'm going to talk about myself personally. I have tried many times to do this. I went to a high school. And I said, you know what, I'm in a small rural area, not too many black male role models around. Let me go to a high school and volunteer at a high school. I put myself out there, spoke to the principal, a black principal, and I said, hey, can I come in and volunteer and chit-chat and help mentor some kids? Oh, yeah, great idea. It's 6 years later. I'm still waiting for that phone call. Went up there three times and nothing happened. Some of us give a lot of lip service, but when it comes down to it, some of us are lazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Some of us are lazy.
And kind of to the point that you were just making, Stacey, too,
like you said, about making sure that there's a positive black male role model and not just a man there. What you said was that, and this isn't to say that there's anything wrong, because I feel like it may have been taken incorrectly. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with boys who are raised by single mothers by any stretch. Not that they turn out to be worse people. It's just simply that you can identify them. You know, that was only my point, is that boys who do not have a male presence, I won't even say are raised by single mothers, but don't have a male role model in their lives, I can usually identify them if somebody asks me to pick them out. You know, just like, you know, you can probably identify kids who speak another language, you know, by certain pronunciations they may have of English words. You know, if they spoke another language first, it doesn't mean that they speak any poorly, or they speak poorly, or that they don't grasp the language, but you can't identify them. And that was my point.
Well, again, I know we're coming up to the end of the hour, and I appreciate all of you guys being here with us tonight. I'm going to give you guys each about 1 minute just to share your final thoughts. If there's just one thing you want to leave with the listeners, what would that be? And I'll start with you, man number one.
My final thought is that, yes, I do believe that black male is probably misunderstood by a great many of his contemporaries, including black women. But ultimately, I think that some of the things that people think about us are because of some of the areas where we have not lived up to our responsibilities. And in order to change that, we have to start one family at a time.
Thank you. Man number two, what are your final thoughts?
Wow. This has been a wonderful topic. An hour or hour and a half is not enough time to get into it. I was a little apprehensive, but we are misunderstood. We are misrepresented. But sometimes we do it to ourselves. I mean, when you have people on TV who make millions of dollars acting like retards, that's all they see, is black men like Dennis Rodman acting like a retard. And you have people like the three of us on the phone who are doing our best to try and dispel all those wrong ideas. Well, it's an uphill battle, and we do it every day.
All right, and man number three.
Yes, I have to fully agree with the two gentlemen, counterparts. You know, it's difficult being black, difficult being a black man, but what else can you do? I know we're not Michael Jackson. We can't bleach our skin and straighten our hair. I don't even have hair. I got a bald head, so I can't even do it. So it's a situation where you have to accept what it is you are and then understand that because of who you are, you're viewed in a certain manner. Now, do you buy into that if it's a negative stereotype and then make that negative stereotype or give it life? If you do so, then you're part of the problem. But if you choose to make a difference, if you choose to walk in a certain and particular light that allows other people to see that there are positive black males in the society, then you're on the opposite end of that spectrum. And that's what we need. That's what we need more of. And to nurture that means that you have to do it through your children. You have to do it through your cousins. You know, you have to do it through your nephews. You have to do it through anyone that you have in your circle, in your sphere. And if you're able to do that, then once again, changing one family at a time, that's how you do it.
All right. Well, thank you, Sister Big Bones. Ladies.
Yes, to man number one and man number two, happy Father's Day to both of you gentlemen. To man number three, happy Father-like Day to you.
Yes, indeed. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers that are listening, right? Mm-hmm. So thank you to everyone for tuning in tonight. Thank you again to our panel. Thank you to my co-host, Sister Big Bones. But we encourage you guys to join us every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Mindshift Talk Radio, 7 p.m. Pacific. Again, share it with your friends, your family members. Special thanks to Sister from Chicago for calling in tonight. We appreciate you. We appreciate everyone in the chat room tonight. You guys be blessed. Have a wonderful, awesome, and amazing week, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Be blessed. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Mind Shift Radio.